Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
In this show, we're going to dive deep into flips, wholesales, holding rentals, and creatively structuring deals.
So that we can show you how you can achieve that lifestyle of freedom that you desire. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. We are super excited for today's episode. We have Elizabeth Butler, who is a local real estate investor in our market here in Boise, Idaho, but then also owns literally like half a city in Indiana. So she is a killer. She is great at building systems and focusing on building the proper team around you to allow you to do more with less effort. So Elizabeth is going to let us know how she built out her systems, how she got started in real estate, and just share her overall knowledge and experience with us today. We're super excited that she's here with us. Elizabeth, thanks so much for being with us today.
Hey, thank you guys for having me today. I'm pretty excited to be here and talk about all the cool things in real estate that we've got going on.
Yeah. And absolutely. We got a ton going on, huh?
A ton going on.
So let's just start with how you got started in real estate. What was the first thing you ever did, and why did you do it?
You bet. The first mistake I ever made in real estate was to buy a house on a whim with a small inheritance, put half down, leverage it for a very tiny 10-year mortgage, and think that we were ballers because we were real estate investors because we bought a rental house. That was back in 2009. And after that, we paid for a really expensive education, learning that the tenant and the property management will make or break your business.
Yeah.
And the more you put into yourself in terms of investing in your education, be it through formal education or through a real estate education, the better you will be at this business.
Yeah, I think that's key. Noah and I were actually just doing the math. We've realized in the past 12 months, we have spent about $55,000 on education, coaching, and like having a little bit of help with our systems being built. But to me, that was like, whoa, I never thought I would spend that much, because I spent the same money Elizabeth did on the same, very expensive education. And I was kind of like, oh, I don't know if I should have done that. But now looking in hindsight, like what has come from that, I have no issue with paying for education. I think that's one of the things that people miss in real estate. Like there's always this like skepticism, like, oh, that guru just wants to take my money. And some of them do. Be careful.
Yeah, some of them definitely do.
Be careful of which one. Make sure they're actually doing what they say that they do, right? Some people post a bunch and you're like, wait, I haven't seen you do a deal in like 3 years. Don't listen to those guys. But there's good guys out there. And you got to be willing to invest in yourself. So you got the tenant. It wasn't really working out. But then you started to learn through this education program. What changes did you start to make? Or did you just sell that and then just start over from scrap on the next project?
Nope. In fact, we still own that property. We implemented systems whereby we interviewed everyone. So when COVID happened, it really didn't impact our business that much, because we had been building a model wherein we did phone interviews and we did Skype type interviews and we did Teams meetings, and we built a team and a group of people all the way across the country. I might mention that this house was bought in Dayton, Ohio in 2009.
Nice.
I've never lived in Dayton, Ohio a day in my life.
I love it.
But my grandmother lives there, so I figured, hey, buy somewhere that you're going to visit grandma anyway.
Yeah.
We refinanced that house to a 30-year mortgage, which you should do, so that you can maximize your capitalization on that debt.
Yeah.
In doing that cash out refi, we actually pulled out 100% of all the money we'd ever put into it. So now it's doing what we call an infinity cash return. So every penny we put into it forevermore, and every penny of rent that covers that mortgage forevermore, it just cash money into our household.
Yeah.
Into our business.
Let's break that down. So you said infinity return.
Infinity return.
That's powerful.
It's powerful.
Super powerful. And I tell people all the time that learning the numbers and getting real familiar with tax laws and getting really familiar with accounting and taxes are sexy when you do them right. They just are.
I love that.
Embrace that because it will be the thing that will make or break your business going forward.
Yeah.
So in mathematics, if you take 1 divided by 0, it's an error on every calculator across the planet until you take calculus. And when you take calculus, it's just a concept of math that says if you have $0 into the thing, and you're gaining a dollar back every single day, you've got an infinity return of a dollar every day for as long as it continues to progress down the path.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate goal in my mind for all things that we invest in.
Yeah.
And it's because ultimately you want that thing to sustain itself, pay for all of its costs of repairs and maintenance. And why would you ever sell the thing if it's making you money every day forever?
Yeah, it's just free money at that point.
Yep. So you said that was your goal. Every single time that you go to invest, your goal is that you can pull out all the money that you put in up front by leveraging the asset, right? And then you want what the tenant pays you in rent to cover you know, the cost of the property manager, your any utilities, taxes, repairs that come up. And if it covers all that plus pays you, it now has an infinite return, because by refinancing, you know, whatever, you buy it on a bridge loan or a short-term financing, whatever, then you refinance into long-term debt when you've improved the asset, you now have all your cash back. You have nothing that you don't have a single dollar of your own money into that property.
Yeah.
And it's going to pay you money every single month for the rest of your life.
Exactly it.
That's boom. Super powerful.
I love
it's
it. Awesome. What, so you have far more rentals than we do. So why don't you break yeah. down, because I think a lot of the people that are going to listen to this show, I think rentals are more obtainable than flips, right? Mm-hmm. Like flipping is a very active type of investing. You have to have a lot of capital. You have to know construction or have somebody who does. And you have to be like extremely risk adverse, right? To go and do a flip.
Yes.
Buy and holds necessarily aren't that way, right? Somebody can house hack. Somebody can move out of their primary residence, get a new house, and then make that a secondary home and a rental, right? Right? So why don't you go over some of the rental expenses that you have on your rentals and kind of break down what that looks like, what kind of things people should be on the lookout for as far as like as they start to build their portfolio and run those numbers. Okay, here's my rent. Because here's what I think what I'm scared of for other people, because it used to be me because I was really done with rentals. Here's my rent. Here's my mortgage. Oh, I make all that in between. Yep. Mm-hmm. No, you don't.
No, you do not.
break down for us what else takes money out of that rent.
You bet. So they're the things that I call fixed costs or overhead costs. And it's just like running any other business. So the rent is the thing that pays for all of the bills for a rental property for it to be done well.
Yeah.
If you are offsetting it, that's a business strategy. It's an investment strategy. Lots of folks do. So yeah. If you're willing to accept a rent that is below what all of your costs are because you're playing an appreciation game, that's a fantastic place to be right now. The market's on fire. Great.
Yeah.
That's not the game that I play and never will and won't have never and won't ever.
Yeah.
It's just because my risk tolerance with regard to my funds and my legacy of this business don't allow that. And knowing your risk tolerance, I think to your point, is a first step. Everybody thinks that you wholesale to make money to flip, to eventually buy a rental property.
Yeah.
And if you have enough capital down to make a down payment on a house, you can skip steps 1 and 2 and go right to buy and holding.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
So those additional costs that you're always going to want to consider and make sure you've accounted for and set aside, property management. Property management will make or break your deal. We were talking just before we went live today that having the right property manager and making sure that they have a good screening process and a system in place for their business is the thing that will save you, because they will make sure that your tenants are well qualified. They'll make sure that they have background checks, things like that. Mm-hmm. You're going to pay anywhere between 8 and 12% for a decent property manager.
Yeah.
There will be contracts between you and them. There will be contracts between them and the tenant. If you're using a property manager or you're doing it yourself and you don't have those things in place, stop now and retool your business. Because even if you're self-managing, you don't have a contract with your tenant. All you have is a squatter and a real high risk.
Yeah, that's good.
So first off, that one. Very next thing, taxes and insurance. While they may be incorporated as part of your mortgage payment, there are insurance needs beyond just what you would have on a regular residence, because you are potentially operating as a business. And if you own more than one property, it's fantastic that you insure that property. I recommend, and we hold true to our business, that we have every single property we own insured up to $1 million.
Oh, nice.
Because for whatever reason, in my brain, the roofer is always the guy who gets hurt. And when he falls off the roof of the house and breaks his neck, and then you have to support his family forever, you darn well better be insured to make sure you can cover that.
I think that's smart.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
Do you do an umbrella policy?
We do.
Okay. Nice. Yep. Nice.
So we have an umbrella policy that further insures our company in addition to individual just insurance on a property, always. We do have a requirement that tenants have insurance. Yep. If the tenant doesn't choose to supply it themselves, we will charge it into our umbrella, and that becomes an additional capture from their rent. So their rent's going to go up to cover that cost, because they will have renter's insurance for their goods inside of your home in our business model.
Yeah.
So keep that one in mind as well. Insurance, insure, keep yourself safe.
Yeah.
Additional costs associated are going to be, like I said, taxes, mortgage debt, the insurance required for that. You may be, if you don't have enough down, you may be paying PMI. Make sure you've accounted for 100% of the things inclusive of your mortgage. If you do not, you will see your profit fly out the window.
Yep, very quickly.
We also would hold back for, in our business, repairs and maintenance. So we have a regular repair and maintenance schedule for all of our properties, because we want to make sure that we are tenanting well and that we're providing appropriate and timely repairs and maintenance on our property, because ultimately it's my house that a resident happens to live in and take care of for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure that I provided them something safe and functional and clean at all times, so that they are incentivized to want to stay there for one.
Yeah.
And two, to maintain it for me and not tear it up.
Yeah, that's good.
You're also going to hold back for what's called capital expense. That's when every 10 or 20 years you're replacing windows, doors, furnaces, water heaters, those types of things that are intrinsic to the use of the property. Because if any of those go out, you don't have a resident living there any longer.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
Yeah, that's good. So you have property management, taxes and insurance, repairs and maintenance, and then you have a separate CapEx aside from your repair and maintenance.
Correct.
For large expenses that may come up over the course of the holding.
Correct.
Awesome. That's great.
And then do you have a fixed dollar amount or percent that you put away based off the gross rent for some of those categories like the CapEx and the repairs?
Absolutely do. So we own a lot of properties. So one of the things that we do is we own a lot of properties that are turn of the century in the Midwest. So they were built anywhere between 1890 and 1930.
Oh, wow.
And because they are of that age, their original foundations and a lot of their original structure is still there. Obviously have brand new roofs effective of whatever we acquire them. Mm-hmm. They have new drywall, things like that. But they are going to have a slightly higher potential repair and maintenance need or a CapEx expense.
Yeah.
On average across the country, depending on the age of the home you're buying, I recommend that you withhold a minimum of 5% for repairs and maintenance from your monthly rent and that you withhold anywhere between 5 and 10% for CapEx.
Yeah.
If you're in a market with low rent rates, you need to withhold a little more as a percentage of your rent, because to pay for a roof, which is on average $5,000, if you're only charging $500 a month, guess what? You're not getting very much, and it's going to take a lot of years to recover the entire roof expense to get that thing replaced.
Yeah,
I think that's a key principle she just mentioned. If you don't account for CapEx, like you're saying, you thought you were making, call it $200 a month, and you just did that for 5 years, and now you have to replace the roof out of your own pocket.
Yeah.
You essentially have had no cash flow for 5 years.
You just lost everything.
So check out this math. If you're renting a house out for $600, right? Say you're taking 5% in CapEx because you want to be pretty low. That's $30 a month.
Correct.
Well, an average hot water heater goes out three to five years, especially under tenant use in a Midwest market. Some of those markets have high sediment in the water lines. So you got a water heater that could be anywhere from $600 to I've seen $1,200 for depending on a unit for a size. So if you held $30 for 3 years, you're not even going to be able to pay for a hot water heater.
Correct.
So make sure, I think that's key. In markets where you have lower rent, take out a higher percentage.
Yep.
Calculate for those things. That's really smart. I want to dive into one of the things you said when you were explaining that. And I think it's just like who you are as a person. You said my legacy, because of my legacy beliefs, I act this way. Right. I love when people say things like that, because I think one of the things that has allowed our business to scale up is we've stopped letting it be a this is a Jeff and a Noah decision. If we say yes to this, cool, let's do it. And we've started defining categories for our business. Mm-hmm. Well, if it fits this bucket, we wholesale it. If it fits this bucket, we rehab it. If it's not in those buckets, we ain't touching it. Okay. So we create these buckets to make the decision for us. And it sounds like you have something similar, or your just total vision for where your company is going and what the impact it has kind of dictates those decisions. So break into that a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a very similar kind of concept in our business, that we have different arms within our business. So an active arm, which is one thing that we do here in the Treasure Valley of Idaho, where we rehab houses. And I tell everyone, like, I'm an actual redeveloper. I'm not a flipper. I don't hire Merry Maids and paint houses usually. I buy things that we have a worst case planning scenario that we're going to take it all the way down to a frame wall. It's like, we know. And that's totally okay. We accept that as part of our active business. In our active business, our risk tolerance is very different. Because it's the thing that supplies just monthly income. It's the active. It's the money that's moving regularly.
Yeah.
You're working for it.
Yeah. We work for it. And that's real key, is we're working actively to make that money. We're going to pay the taxes on it. Mm-hmm. We're going to apply it in different ways. But we earn that active money, one, as a part of our household income, and two, as a part of our investment criteria.
Yeah. Like,
it's our strategy that we will make X amount of profit on any turn that we do in our active earning, and it will be re-implemented into our passive arm.
Yeah.
And the passive arm is that which is our legacy builder, is what I call it. And it's the thing that will long outlive myself in terms of what those dollars do for the future. They will support my family. They will support other philanthropic endeavors that we want to take on, those types of things. It's that money that when you build it correctly and when you structure correctly and you buy correctly with an intention to never sell a property. My husband gets on me all the time because he's like, you've got to sell something eventually. And my question's always, well, why?
Why?
Yeah. But why?
What are you going to do with the money?
Time is the thing that will always recover you any loss with regard to finances. It just will. If you sit on it long enough and you give time its ability to make up those losses or gains and leverage average out, it'll make it up.
That's so good.
So that's one of our criteria, is that if we're buying something as a holding property, which we're talking today about rentals, we take that small chunk of cash out of the active, which is a $5,000 minimum usually. So I say, hey, I'm going to chunk $5,000 of my active income towards mm-hmm. any passive income property I'm going to buy.
Yeah.
Sometimes $5,000 is all it takes for me to buy a tax lien property.
That's
like I literally buy the house for $5,000. When you buy a house for $5,000, be warned you're probably going to spend $30,000 fixing it to yeah. make it a habitable property again.
Yeah.
And if you're not experienced like Elizabeth is with her systems and processes, that $30,000 is more likely to be $40,000.
Correct.
Yeah. Because that $5,000 purchase is some odd 2,000 miles away.
Correct.
So you have to have an extremely well built out team.
I just didn't want anyone to get too excited about $5,000 houses and realize that she has spent years crafting yes. a system that allows her to do $30,000 rehabs. And anyone else, that would be substantially more.
Potentially more. Yeah. By a lot.
Yeah. You also have to have a system in place to find those $5,000 properties.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've never found a $5,000 property.
I haven't either. I'm actually, like, I wouldn't mind digging into that. It sounds kind of cool.
So after the show, just let us
know. We'll just hang out and have coffee.
One of the things that I love, we had a lunch probably about a month or two back, yeah. and you were telling us about a strategy that you implemented to really get started here in the Treasure Valley market. And that was that you went to agents and you said, hey, if you have off-market listings, I want you to bring those to me. And everybody makes that pitch, right? But you had more value to add. And that's what we always talk about on the show, is have value to yep. add. What was that value that you were adding?
Probably the biggest thing, when we work with agents, we don't sign exclusivity contracts unless an agent brings us an off-market deal.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an agent bringing an off-market deal to my team, we will be paying you your commission on the front side. And granted, we pay less than a lot of folks do because we are investors. So there's got to be some spread in it. So your commission side of it when we buy is lower.
Mm-hmm.
But if you bring us an off-market deal, we will always pay you full commission on the backside.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to pay the full six to one person if they connect both the seller, me, to a buyer.
Yeah.
Like, why would I ever shortchange you for the value that you add mm-hmm. as an agent to our team?
Because yeah.
100%. There are things
that agents do that I can say without any equivocation, I'm never going to do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
let the folks who are experts at it do those things and help you to grow your business.
Yeah. And I think even beyond the financial aspect, one of the things that Elizabeth had done was that you would open, when you first got started here, you would open up that property when it was being renovated or nearly completed.
Absolutely.
And only one type of buyer pool had early access.
Correct.
Let us know what that looks like, because I actually think, just as a person who loves helping people and being generous, if I'm the realtor and you come to me and you're like, you can make your 6% commission, sure, I'm excited about the money. Yep. But then the next step that you're going to explain to us right now, that honestly excites me more. Because I know there's something that somebody else is getting out of this far beyond just us making a little bit of money.
Sure. And I think probably the biggest thing that is the takeaway for our business is that in the market where we actively flip, we are always seeking a first-time home buyer.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We have an expected in our business slightly longer hold time. So when we open up those properties that we are actively working on, once we are past the major demo and we're putting the property back together, the agents that we work with, and it will be exclusive to, if it was off market, the agent who brought it to us, their group of agents. So they're all in houses in terms of brokerages.
Yeah.
So that brokerage house gets early access for any first-time home buyer who wants yeah. to come take a look. That's a VA loan. I don't care what your loan product is. It doesn't really matter to me. They're all going to meet the same criteria and standard. But we allow those folks to come in and preview the house so that they can start getting their financial paperwork and their things together early on.
Yeah.
And that way we have the ability to accept an early preliminary offer from some of those folks. They have the ability to say, hey, we're going to lock this down before it ever hits the market and before the embattlement happens on the MLS
yeah.
where we're in a really busy and hot market.
Yeah.
And it's because there are a huge group of people being underserved in the Treasure Valley right now. And those folks are the folks who have been here for a long time, worked really hard, and now are at the point where they're leaving being renters and needing to be homeowners or trying to be homeowners and are really struggling.
Yeah. Because we are like, I know the entire U.S. is hot right now.
Yes.
But being in the Boise market, I kind of laugh when I hear some people, not that I'm like judging other markets, but like I study trends and statistics and appreciation, and Boise is blowing everybody out of the water right now. Like Canyon County did 55% from quarter one of last year to quarter one of this year. That is like unheard of. That's incredible. And so when you're looking at that from a first time home buyer's perspective, that means that the house that you could have afforded for $200,000 last year is now $300,000 before renovations. Renovations, mm-hmm. you're yep. pushing $350,000. So I think that's awesome. I haven't heard of anybody else who seeks to help people out in that way with a product. Like everybody wants to, in investing, you want to maximize your return, right?
Absolutely.
But your return isn't always just dollars,
correct.
Right? Like your return could be dollars, coupled with the fact that I know that I helped a first time home buyer get into this house.
Yep.
We had one, that's not our strategy, but we have one where it kind of worked out like that. We're pretty active on social media, and an agent reached out to us and said, hey, I have this really awesome VA couple. Do you have anything? It could be really small in Nampa that is kind of around this price point. And we really hemmed and hawed about it because we were like, man, we just said we're not going to pre-list anything anymore and give people early access. But the agent did a really good job making the pitch. Yep. And I went and met the people out at the house. And we ended up making a good amount of money on the deal. Like, it wasn't like, oh, we left 30 grand on the table or nothing. I actually think we got
pretty... Which we have done.
Yeah, which
we should tell them about that.
Yeah, which that's why we were so skeptical, is we tried to actually help a family before this who had got kind of a... they got a bad situation with another investor. And that investor kept their earnest money when he probably shouldn't have. And it was a little weird. And so we were like, oh, we're going to try and help you out. We're going to try and get you into a house. Well, unfortunately, we were dumb and we didn't reassess the market. And we're like, yeah, we just got this flip. You can have it for like $245. Mm-hmm. By the time they moved into the house, and then they were FHA, so they couldn't buy it for another 60 days because we had just bought it and did like a 3-week renovation. We could have probably sold it for $300. Like, we literally left like $50,000 on the table. So we were like, oh man, maybe we don't do that again.
That one stung a little.
But it was cool. Like, with the time that they wasted being stuck in limbo with these other people that they were trying to do deal with, the market had actually gone up. Like, literally in that 3-month period, that the houses they were looking at went from 215 to 220 all the way up to like 260.
Yeah.
So they actually wouldn't have been able to buy a house.
Yeah. Exactly. And it was all because this other investor had decided to string them out for so long. They afforded his house. They needed like a 2-day extension. He didn't. It was a mess. But that's a long story for another time. I want to talk about, we know now what your business looks like, how it's built out.
Yep.
What made you make the jump to real estate? Like, what was the why behind it, the big motivational force? Because you were in corporate America in a very successful job before this, right?
Yes. So I had a long career, and my formal life career, my W-2 career, was I actually worked in not-for-profit healthcare, and I built systems for people. Like, that was what I did my whole life. And in working in healthcare in that last 7 years, we did so much research and so much study and set up so many different kinds of supporting infrastructure around housing. And so housing became a topic that I talked about regardless. And my husband and I, the really cool real estate investors who had our one little house from 2009 that we finally got straight on. In having seen the desperate need of housing across the country, it became really evident to us that we could take the skill set that we had paid for our education with regard specifically to real estate to like make sure we were making right choices going forward. But ultimately, the jump to real estate was because we had to have our time back. To me, I've told people for decades, like, time is my single most valuable asset. And I was using and wasting a whole lot of my time on other people's priorities that were not necessarily my own.
Yeah.
And building that legacy. And we have a kiddo in our household, and there were things that we wanted to do with our lives well beyond working for somebody else and having a 401k and retiring at 68 years of age and hoping that we can afford to continue living where we want to choose our life became really a priority to us, because there are things in this life that you only have so much time. So make sure that you're using it to the very best effectiveness of what you want that to look like.
Yeah, 100%. Hey, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your jump into a secondary market that is 2,000 miles away from you.
Yep.
Because that we were actually just having this conversation with somebody else the other day. Like, we felt comfortable doing it because we've built up the muscle. Just slammed the mic in my own face there. We built up the muscle because we take on crazy flip projects. So for us, it was like, okay, a house is a house. There's only so many things that could be wrong with it. And we've dealt with all of them at this point. Well, I wouldn't say we've dealt with all of them.
Oh, we've pretty much done it.
We've done pretty much all if an issue comes up, we've fixed it now.
Yep.
But for anyone else, like, it was still terrifying to go into a market 2,000 miles away and, like, relinquish the control and be like, if something goes wrong, I can't go drive by and see it.
Sure. Yeah.
So how did you identify Indiana and the, you don't have to name a specific market trend, but the specific market trend. Yeah. There ain't no competition. Not with Elizabeth. She owns half the town, dude. She owns the city.
I'm pretty sure she's on the mayoral ballot for next month.
She is. They got a statue of her. They got streets named after her.
Oh, no.
How did you identify the market? And then what were, like, the first, like, big three things you did to prepare yourself to jump in?
Sure. The way that we look at markets and the way that we determine to invest in this particular one, that seems really loud. Is that I run all kinds of, like Jeff, I look at all kinds of statistical analysis to say, yep. Hey, where are the jobs? What are the jobs? What are the things that stabilize that market in terms of who are the residents going to be that are going to potentially rent these properties?
Yeah.
And I am seeking those places where the infrastructure exists, mm-hmm. but is not being utilized because the town has shifted what it's done. So if you're anywhere in the Midwest, it's often known as the Rust Belt. If you're anywhere east yeah. of the Mississippi,
yeah.
it's where steel and cars used to be manufactured, and there was milling for paper and lumber.
Yeah.
Those things died.
Yep.
Those things died before I was born in a lot of places.
Yeah.
So the ultimate theory is that those cities or those smaller towns now have that infrastructure. The houses are there. Mm-hmm. The industrial buildings are there. The mills, the things that would draw jobs back to that market exist.
Yeah.
They're not being utilized though. Mm. So where there is job growth and population growth and stabilized income earnings, so where there's a Walmart distribution, where there's Amazon, where there are existing universities or healthcare systems. Yep. I was in healthcare for a long time. If you have a growing healthcare system in a region, you are guaranteed to have an influx of population. Mm. And it's, even if it's just the healthcare system hiring additional employees,
yeah.
same thing with a university. If a university is expanding, just the expansion of that university, you need groundskeepers, janitorial services, those types of like really infrastructural jobs to that thing that exists in that market will draw residents to that market.
Yeah.
Oftentimes they'll come in first as a tenant, mm-hmm. because they have to rent to find out where you want to be, where part of town do you want to live in, what kind of yeah. house do you want to be in, but you need somewhere to land to do your job. Mm-hmm. And then you will turn into a buyer potentially later down the road. But there's a huge amount of the population across this country that will be lifelong tenants. They yeah. want to rent.
Especially in those markets.
Okay. It's perfectly yeah. okay. And they choose to do that so that they do not have to take on the burden of huge down payments, mm-hmm. of continuing maintenance and repairs of the property themselves. Yep. They can defer that to somebody else. And mm-hmm. what a fantastic way to live your life and have additional free flowing cash in your household if that's your choice.
Yeah.
Yep.
So those are the kind of markets that we target. We go in and we buy, like I said, those turn of the century, really older homes. We do a lot of redevelopment. And by redevelopment on those ones, I mean, we take down to what is below grade. We actually have dug out foundation before. I've never had to jack up a house to date, knock on wood. Knock on fake tape wood. But we haven't had to actually jack one up and re-pour a foundation under it, but we've had to reshore foundation several times.
Yeah.
And then we just restructure and rebuild on top of that existing foundation. If it's been there for 100 or 200 years, it's probably going to be okay for another 50.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the bottom line.
It lasted that long.
It yeah. lasted that long. And as long as they're infrastructurally sound, like there's no reason that those cannot be utilized for housing. Mm-hmm. And again, like you said, all across this country right now, there's a huge migration of population shifting around. Lots mm-hmm. of folks are going back to those, what was your hometown.
Yeah.
And it's because they can now. They yep. have realized you don't have to live in your urban industrialized center. If you live in New York City, you live there because you choose it.
Yeah.
You don't move to New York City for a job and then say, oh, I hate this place, I'm going to stick here.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And so there's growing and shifting population all across the country. Our population is continuing to grow with COVID. You found out that you either love the person you're with or you hate the person you're with. And if you love them, you're probably going to have a baby soon.
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah. We had baby boomers. We're probably going to have like the COVID
boom.
Yeah. There's going to be a name boom. For yeah. it. Yeah. yeah. The Rona babies.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Rona
there you go.
And it really is just going to continue. And as long as there's population that needs housing, if you're in the business of feeding people, getting people clean water, providing housing for people, you're probably in the right business.
Yeah. That's good.
So you talked about healthcare systems, and that's pretty interesting to me because after this show, I want to show you the spreadsheets we're building because we're cool. analyzing a bunch of markets. But you'll probably look at it and be like, "These are the seven things
you guys
things
are
you're
missing."
Doing
like
wrong.
Five things.
Who made this? A kindergartner? But how would someone go about looking up if a healthcare system is growing in a particular market?
Sure. If you go on like the Google, it's like the Google is the most amazing thing ever. But if you go into Google and you look up healthcare systems and not-for-profits and even for-profits have statements that they release on an annual basis.
Yeah.
So as an example, one of the markets that I also own in is Cleveland, Ohio. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons we bought in Cleveland, Ohio, and we don't own nearly as much, but because there's just a lot more things there than the markets I'm in Indiana. But in Cleveland, Ohio, Cleveland Clinic made a statement probably 5 to 10 years ago that said that they were going to be the number one cardiac program in the country.
Oh, wow.
That was their health system goal. Mm. By setting that goal, they have to bring in higher level specialties. Mm. They have to improve everything in their infrastructure to support that growth and change in their model.
Yeah.
By doing so, we bought their four years ago. So mm-hmm. they've made the statement and we started buying there pretty quickly because I said, if nothing else, there's a population already existing in Cleveland, pretty high rent population. It's great, nice and stable. But more importantly, if we grow and buy close to where the hospital system and the university system are there, those folks are coming to Cleveland. Mm-hmm. They're coming for their job. They will have in transient people who will come through for 3 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. They will have people who will come in for 2 to 3 years, and they'll have people that will come there forever.
Yeah.
Mm. Let's be on the bottom level of capturing those folks in really high quality rental properties where they can be a resident and not have to deal with a darn thing.
Yeah.
Like they move in and they just hang out. We can do trash services, laundry services. If they need Amazon packages, you can set up little individual lockers that they can pay a little extra rent to have their Amazon delivery come and not worry about it being stolen. Like just those extra incremental steps that you will take knowing your resident population.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's what that brings up to me is strategic advantages, right?
Correct.
One of the things we always talk about is define what your strategic advantage is in a particular market. Like our strategic advantage in the Treasure Valley is us because we're here. Yep. In another market, we cannot be our strategic advantage. So we need to identify what that is. And it's really cool. Your strategic advantage was that you were previously in not-for-profit healthcare. So you understood when you're looking at this, what those growth trends look like.
Absolutely.
So when you're starting to think about getting into real estate, think about the things that you might have that somebody else doesn't, right? Okay. We all come from different backgrounds with different perspectives, different jobs, different lives. That is not a negative. That's a benefit.
Absolutely.
Figure out what you have that's different from somebody else and figure out how to, for lack of a better word, I was going to say exploit, but let's just say use that for your benefit, right? Determine what it is about you. Like some people are hustlers. You can get on the phone and you can talk. Get a list, get on the phone, call people, talk, do wholesales. Yep. Some people have a background in construction. Partner up with somebody with money, do a JV, be the contractor, and then make some money on the back end. Like everybody has a little bit that they can bring to the table and add a benefit, and that can help you grow your business. So I think that's really cool because yours is pretty unique. Like I haven't heard that one before. That's really cool.
I think you identified. I think you nailed it. I have a huge belief that everyone has a superpower.
Yeah.
Find out what yours is. Is it that you're great at talking to people? Is it you have a fantastic ability to see different color scheme? Is it that you have this internal clock that tells you like, hey, it's 4 a.m. every day, and you know, like every single person on the planet has a superpower. Identify yours. And I'm okay saying exploit it. Take your superpower and exploit the heck out of it.
Bend it. Yeah,
because
do
that
everything.
Thing is something that nobody else on this planet has.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you maximize it?
I love it. That's so good. One of the things you would talk to us when we met is that rental that you have in Dayton, Ohio.
Yes.
You go to Dayton, Ohio every once in a while, right?
Yep.
And that's to visit your mom?
Grandmother.
So when you visit your grandma, now that's a tax write-off, right?
Absolutely.
So that was one of the things that I was really fascinated by. I'm a huge sports guy, right? So like quarter four of this year, I will be buying season tickets to the Blazers. Multiple, right?
That's a whole other questionable thing.
Nah, but check this out. Because I'm going to be acquiring rental properties in Portland. So I'm going to go and visit. It's a tax write-off for my trip there. Yep. But I'm also going to be using those tickets to then donate to organizations and to donate to people who are working on my team. So a majority of what I pay for those will be a write-off as well. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really cool to think about like, this is like one of the fun sides of real estate, right? Like once you start building a portfolio and like finding some success, where are some areas you want to travel? Where are some things that you want to go to? Where are people that you really love that you want to make sure you have a reason to go see them every once in a while, right? Yep. Get a rental there, then it's a tax write-off and you have no excuse. So that's one of the powers of real estate, right? It allows you to kind of create this lifestyle that you desire. And that's why we all do this, right?
Correct.
We don't do this I'm sure the money's nice, but like time and seeing people and traveling and experiencing a different type of life is the main reason we do this. So freedom.
It all comes down to freedom.
Freedom of your time.
That's why the podcast is called Chasing Freedom.
It's almost we're all chasing freedom,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Cool. Well, Elizabeth, we really appreciate you spending the time with us today. We always have a couple of like a little lightning round that we ask. What are some books that you would recommend that people read if they want to get into investing or just business overall? Or if you're not a book person, a podcast is fine too. There's this one called Chasing Freedom.
Chasing Freedom is really cool. You should listen to that one. I am an avid book reader. So at any given time, I am listening to a book on because a lot of my time is spent commuting in a car or something. Yep. So I love Audible. You should do it if it's not that expensive. Do those things. Number one to me is always Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss.
Yeah.
If you have not read it, you should. And you should not only buy a hard copy book that you can like underline and highlight and dog ear, whatever it is your system looks like, buy the hard copy, but then buy the one that you can listen to. And yeah. it's because the person who narrates it happens to be the person who teaches it and wrote it.
Oh, nice.
And so having his voice talk to you the way that he intended it to be read and written.
That's really cool.
Is really helpful. Like, it really will teach you, hey, if somebody's speaking really softly mm-hmm. and very calmly, if you match and pace with them, you'll get further. And if somebody's talking like this really high key and fast, because I'm notorious for it, know that if you can't keep up with that pace, you've got to figure out some other way to distract that person because they're not listening otherwise. Yeah. So that one's huge. The Wholesaling Bible, and I forget which one of them wrote it. I believe it was Paul Assasian or Than Merrill, one of the two.
Yeah.
Wrote the Wholesaling Bible. It's fantastic. If you are just starting out in real estate, like, hey, how do I do the thing?
Yeah.
Pick it up. It's an easy, simple read. It doesn't have a lot of like difficult concept, and all the concepts are broken down really, really simply into terminology that any lay person could understand.
Yeah.
Once you've read that one, if you feel like you want to stick to wholesaling or you want to be done and not do wholesaling, then read the Rehabbing Bible by that same group of folks. And it's just because, again, they're taking really high level, difficult concepts and making them much easier to understand it.
Yeah.
Like, it just is. Make your life as easy as you can. Gosh, put me on the spot. So I had to pull out my phone.
That was two really good. You knew not only the name, you knew the authors and like a brief synopsis of the book. That's impressive.
Like, yeah,
we should have given her like this question up front so she could have like pulled all that.
Nah, I'd like to see it on the spot too. Because then, like, you know, like, I'm not a big reader, so if I get the question in advance, like, I'll come up with three books.
Just maybe like
I
the Bible.
Yeah.
And there's legit like two books I've read in my entirety, or in their entirety. It's the Bible. And then the book, The Holes, like Holes based on the movie, like the kids' movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I may have gotten like a Hunger Games book back in high school, but it's another story.
Every book I get, I buy Jeff a copy. He hasn't read one of them.
I haven't.
He hasn't read one of them.
I started all of them. I haven't read any in their entirety.
Yeah, you started How to Split the Difference.
I have a really great bookshelf though at home. Like, yeah, they look amazing. Looks good. If you come into my house, you're like, this guy is smart.
It's all for show.
Yeah. Well, cool. How would you recommend the listeners get in touch with you if they have any questions or want to get to know more about your business?
Sure. We are at www.imaginehomebuyers.com. You can email from there. You can do all the things. Like, all the things are on the website.
Yeah.
Or you can also just email directly to info@imaginehomebuyers.com. And the other book, it's like I had to pull it up because I'm reading one right now, listening to one right now, which is The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy.
Oh my gosh. Okay. That's amazing.
You should listen to that one.
Amazing.
I think I'm going to have to download Audible after this one.
Yeah. The Compound one, I listened to that in January of 2020.
Okay.
And 2020 was a life-changing year for me personally.
Yeah.
And I'd give a lot of credit to that book. It literally is just about like the smallest but consistent daily habits, time and time again, build into something massive.
Yeah.
We're sitting on, like, I mean, all of us have built some really awesome, amazing businesses, but it all started with simple habits.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just repeated daily.
Exactly.
Which let's wrap it up on that because that's brilliant. You don't just jump to the finish line, right? No. You build there slowly. Mm-hmm. A friend of ours, Brian, said this the other day, and I'll butcher his quote, but it was that people see the synopsis is people see your success and they forget about the 7 years that they think that overnight successes are overnight successes. But an overnight success is somebody who finally found success after years of grinding and building.
And failing.
So know you're going to fail. Know that it's really just simple steps. That's why I think that the book you pointed out, Wholesaling Bible, I think that's awesome because it breaks down this big concept into super simple steps. And I am only successful because I follow what smarter people than I say to do.
Absolutely.
Follow those steps. Redo them. It's not that hard. Well, hey, guys, thanks so much for listening and watching. Elizabeth, thanks so much for being with us today. It was awesome.
Pleasure.
Sweet. Thanks, guys. legit like two books I've read in my entirety, or in their entirety. It's the Bible. And then the book, the Holes, like Holes based on the movie, like the kids movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I may have gotten like a Hunger Games book back in high school, but it's another story.
Every book I get, I buy Jeff a copy. He hasn't read one of them.
I haven't.
He hasn't read one of them.
I know. I started all of them. I haven't read any in their entirety.
Yeah, you started How to Split the Difference.
I have a really great bookshelf though at home. Like they look amazing. If you come into my house, you're like, this guy is smart.
It's all for show.
Yeah. Well, cool. How would you recommend the listeners get in touch with you if they have any questions or want to get to know more about your business?
Sure. We are at www.imaginehomebuyers.com. You can email from there. You can do all the things. Like all the things are on the website.
Yeah.
Or you can also just email directly to info@imaginehomebuyers.com. And the other book, it's like I had to pull it up because I'm listening to one right now, which is The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy.
Oh my gosh. Okay. That's amazing.
You should listen to that one.
Amazing. I think I'm going to have to download Audible after this one.
Yeah. The Compound one, I listened to that in January of 2020.
Okay.
And 2020 was a life-changing year for me personally.
Yeah.
And I'd give a lot of credit to that book. It literally is just about like the smallest but consistent daily habits, time and time again, build into something massive.
Yeah,
we're sitting on all of us have built some really awesome, amazing businesses.
Yeah.
But it all started with simple habits.
Yeah,
yep.
Just repeated daily.
Exactly.
Which let's wrap it up on that because that's brilliant. You don't just jump to the finish line, right? No. You build there slowly. Mm-hmm. A friend of ours, Brian, said this the other day, and I'll butcher his quote, but it was that people see the synopsis is people see your success and they forget about the 7 years that they think that overnight successes are overnight successes. But an overnight success is somebody who finally found success after years of grinding and building.
And failing.
So know you're going to fail. Know that it's really just simple steps. That's why I think that the book you pointed out, Wholesaling Bible, I think that's awesome because it breaks down this big concept into super simple steps. And I am only successful because I follow what smarter people than I say to do.
Absolutely.
Follow those steps. Redo them. It's not that hard. Well, hey, guys, thanks so much for listening and watching. Elizabeth, thanks so much for being with us today. It was awesome.
Pleasure.
Sweet. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel in the show notes below. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, feel free to do it via our Instagrams. You can also follow us for our funny content on TikTok.